I call this remote meeting of the Higher Education Committee to order. I'd like to take a moment to introduce our new committee legislative assistant. His name is Sam Parmekar. Welcome to the committee, Sam. Would you like to just make a brief statement?
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. Hi, everyone. My name is Sam Parmekar. Really excited to be joining the committee this year and looking forward to working with all of you this session.
Thanks. It's wonderful to have you, and I am enjoying working with you, and I know our committee will as well. So thank you. And then we will take this, our committee legislative assistant will take the role to determine which members are present.
Again. Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Chair Bernardi, present. Vice Chair Christensen.
Present.
Vice Chair Christensen, present. Representative O'Neill is excused. Representative Albright. Representative Albright. Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Daniels, present. Representative Erickson.
Erickson, present.
Representative Erickson, present. Representative Hansen.
Present.
Representative Hansen, present. Representative Heinzman. Representative Heinzman. Representative Howard.
Present.
Representative Howard, present. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, present.
Representative Keeler, present. Representative Kosnick. Representative Cleavorne.
Cleavorne, present.
Representative Cleavorne, present. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, present.
Representative Kosnick, present. Representative Crenshaw.
Crenshaw, present.
Representative Crenshaw, present. Representative Mason. Representative Mason. Representative Meckland.
Meckland, present.
Representative Meckland, present. Representative Neuer.
Neuer, present.
Representative Neuer, present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Representative Sandell, present. Representative Sandsted.
Present.
Representative Sandsted, present. Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Representative Thompson, present. Representative Albright. Representative Albright.
I think he's just joining right now.
Okay. Representative Mason. Representative Heinzman. And Representative Albright.
Present.
Representative Albright, present. Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you. And may I have a motion to approve the minutes from April 7th, 2021?
Don't move, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative Neuer. Representative Neuer moves approval of the minutes for April 7th, 2021. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for April 7th, 2021 are approved. So I want to just give a little framework for our day today. We are very fortunate to have students from around the state joining us today. And we want to start off this year by hearing from each of our student groups and centering their voices in the conversation that we will be having this session. First, we will be hearing from Mitch Johnson. Mitch is currently enrolled at Red Lake Nation College and serves on the Office of Higher Education's Student Advisory Council. And I want to give our members, before I introduce Mr. Johnson, I want to just let members know that we are going to have roughly about 15 minutes for each of our presenters, and then they'll talk for about 10 minutes, and we'll leave some time for questions, and then we'll move on to the next student group so we can get all their voices heard during this committee time. So, Mr. Johnson, please introduce yourself to the committee and welcome. Proceed.
All right. Hello, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yep.
Great. So, firstly, I would like to acknowledge Chairperson Connie Bernardi and committee members. I want to thank you for your time today as we sit and listen to these important issues. Uju gakina awia, mukuns nindijin the cause, manameg nindodem, miskwa gamiwi, zaga iguning, nindun jaba. Hello, everyone. My name is Mitchell Johnson. I am a member of the Catfish Clan, and I come from the Red Lake Nation here in northern Minnesota. I'm a member of the tribe. I'm a member of the Red Lake Band of Ojibwe. But I grew up about 40 miles south of the reservation in a small lakeside town of Bemidji, Minnesota. Although I was born and raised in Bemidji, I've spent much of my life in the Little Rock community here in Red Lake. That's where my family has resided and my ancestors resided for as long and as far back as we can go. I've spent much of my life in Little Rock working alongside my family in our traditional Ojibwe lifestyle. So this just means for us living along with the seasons. In the springtime, we tap maple trees and gather sap, which is then boiled down to make syrup or sugar. In the summer, we collect berries, we tend to our gardens, we hunt and fish in our beautiful lake and in our forests here in Red Lake. And in the fall, we harvest wild rice on our lakes and our rivers in the area. So living that lifestyle and being a part of our culture is very important to me personally. The city of Bemidji, where I grew up, is a very unique place in the sense that it is a border town. This just means that it's a town that borders or neighbors a federally recognized reservation. I feel that Bemidji is unique in this sense, in the way that it's surrounded by not just one, not two, but three of the largest reservations here in Minnesota. And that would include the White Earth Reservation, the Leech Lake Reservation, and then the Red Lake Reservation as well. I attended a small charter school in Bemidji called Trek North, and I grew up all in Bemidji, and that's where I went and did all of my early schooling. And I often struggled and felt that school was kind of a challenge. I never really felt like I got the sense that it was for me, and I wasn't the best student early on. But right out of high school, I attempted to go with the social flow, and I attempted to attend a four-year school, and quickly felt that I was a bit in over my head and a little bit out of my element. Like I said, just didn't really feel like it was for me. And I actually wasn't able to finish on my first go at school. So after that, for years of bouncing from an array of different jobs, I kind of found myself in a bit of a rut and started kind of asking myself, you know, what would my future look like and what I want to do with the rest of my life. And I heard from other members of the Red Lake community and members of my family that I heard about the newly accredited Red Lake Nation College, and I decided to give my higher education another shot. So now here I am at the age of 27. I am a first-year student at RLNC, and I am on track to graduate in the spring of 2024. And I feel like I finally found a school that really works well for me, and I feel like I've really found a place where I actually enjoy learning. And I enjoy coming to my classes. One of the major reasons why I wanted to come to this school, firstly, is because it's my home. Like I said, this is where my family's from. This is where we've come from for a long time. This is the community where I feel most at home and most comfortable. So coming to school here seemed kind of like a no-brainer for me. Another major reason why I wanted to attend this school is because RLNC is deeply grounded in the Ojibwe language and the Ojibwe culture. Like I mentioned before, living that lifestyle and living with the seasons is a major part of who I am, and personally, it's very important to me. So coming to a place where I can learn more about that culture and more about my language and kind of immerse myself in it has really been a blessing for me and was a major reason why I wanted to come to school here. The Red Lake Nation College is located right in the heart of Red Lake. The Red Lake Nation is a closed reservation. This just means that we're a sovereign nation and that we as tribal members hold the land in common. So I'm here today testifying in front of you to represent the Red Lake Nation College, as well as the tribal colleges that are in the surrounding area. So this would include the Leech Lake Tribal College in Cass Lake, Minnesota, the White Earth Tribal and Community College in Mahnomen, Minnesota, and the Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College in Cloquet, Minnesota as well. The Red Lake Nation College itself has about 192 students enrolled with an average student age of 33 years. And although the tribal colleges do their best to provide all the resources needed for students to be successful, we still face many challenges. Because our schools are so rural, for example, we often have limited internet access that is available and affordable for our students. So just making sure that we have, computers, access to internet, maybe mobile hotspots, and make sure that our students have all the necessary resources to come to class, especially with everything being distance learning and online right now. That's a great need that we see. Another great need that we have is because our average student population age is 33, many of our students have families and children of their own. So a lack of affordable and available childcare is also a challenge that we see. For example, for me, from my personal experience as a student here, like I said, we're online and distance learning, and it's really often that you see children in the laps of my classmates and in our Google Meet classes and in the background, and there's a lot of parents that I go to school with here. Doing their best to attend classes and stay engaged and stay focused is often a challenge for them. Another challenge that we see along those same lines is a lack of affordable housing for our students. In our tribal communities, you'll often see multiple families living in a single home. And again, these can make things difficult for our students to stay focused and engaged in their class and their schoolwork, or even have a designated, work or study area in the home. Just more people in the home just means, more shared resources. So in summary, if there's anything that you can do to help us with internet accessibility, to find ways to provide affordable student housing and affordable student childcare, we would very, very much appreciate it. Getting your help in supporting our tribal colleges and providing our students with the resources necessary to be successful is huge. And I'm very grateful and honored to be given the opportunity to testify in front of you today and to do my part to represent not only Red Lake Nation College, but the tribal colleges in the surrounding area as well, and the tribal colleges of Northern Minnesota. Thank you so much, Chimigwich, for your time and your consideration today. Thank you. Is there any questions that you have for me at this time?
Miigwech, Mr. Johnson. Very, very, very well done. I'm going to see if any of our members have any questions. And we have a question from Representative Keeler. Go ahead, Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. Pulame Chimigwech Mitchell, for stepping up and talking to us today. I'm really proud of you and the other
Mr.
Savory, you're...
I also just want to point out that I appreciate you pointing out the fact of what the average age of our students are. I think you said 33. And I just kind of want the population, the community to understand that I think that we're going to see this shift in general when it comes to higher education, and making sure that when we create supports for our students, that we're looking at them more than just a student, but actually as a community member, and mostly sometimes as a parent as well. So I really appreciate you bringing that lens and starting us off today with language. I think that is extremely important. I just want to say thank you for your time and the work that you can continue to do.
Thank you.
Members, are there any other questions? I see Representative Meckland.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. With the concern about internet access, I can totally appreciate that. I live in an area that has like incredibly horrible internet. I do good to get 5 megabytes per second. I recently took a gamble based on some other folks that did some beta testing, and I invested in a newer version of a satellite thing And I am proud to say right now I'm getting 78 megabytes per second. And I'm 150 feet away from, in a different building from the little thing that sends it all out. So in the house, I get 357 megabytes per second. Well, over here in the other building. So this is some new technology, and I tried it, and I just want to say that there's stuff out there to look at that is a lot less expensive than laying fiber everywhere. So I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Thompson, for that interesting presentation. And
it's best Mr. Johnson. Wishes as,
I'm it's sorry, Mr. Johnson.
Yeah,
Mr.
Go ahead.
Johnson, yes.
Yeah,
for your presentation and best wishes in the future. I'm just wondering, is the Red Lake Nation College able to enroll those who are not tribal members or not American Indian?
Yes.
Mr. Johnson.
Yes. Yep. We have lots of other students that are not enrolled in Red Lake, and some of them aren't enrolled in any other reservations as well, or tribal communities as well. So.
Very good. Thank you.
Member, are there any other questions? And while we're waiting to see if there is, I just wanted to ask Mr. Johnson, could you just share with us what you have side of what your plans are and what your studies are, your credentials that you're planning on getting?
Right now, there's still a lot of changes and ideas kind of bouncing around, but right now here at Red Lake Nation College, I'm just going for my AA. And after that, my plan is to hopefully enroll in Bemidji State University. Again, that's another community I'm close to and where I'm from. So I was hoping to continue my education there. And I know they have a great Ojibwe language program that I want to continue in and get involved in. And then I also have quite an interest in history, and particularly the history of Red Lake Nation. And just kind of wanted to dive deeper into the historical culture of our people and the language as well, too. So,
well, thank you, and best wishes to you, Miigwech, and we look forward to our continued relationship throughout the session. So thank you. Our next, I see no further questions, so we'll move on to our Minnesota Association of Private College, and we'll be hearing from the students there. With us, we have Jonathan Kroll, and the chair of MAPCS, and with Melody Herr, who is currently a sophomore at St. Catherine. Mr. Kroll, please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I wish to express my gratitude to you today for this opportunity to testify. My name is Jonathan Kroll, and I'm in my last semester here at St. Mary's University of Minnesota at our Winona campus. I'm a political science major with a history minor, and I entered the political science field because I saw it as an opportunity to give back to the community. And following my graduation, I hope to do exactly that by working for a chamber of commerce or other nonprofit organization here in our state. I come from Seymour, Wisconsin, a small city about 25 miles west of legendary Lambeau Field in Green Bay. When I entered high school, I initially wanted to go to a large college, but as I toured those colleges, I realized that wasn't for me. Coming from a small town, I was surrounded by a great community who cared deeply about one another, and that was something I wanted in the college I went to. From the moment I stepped foot on the St. Mary's campus as a junior in high school, I knew it was the place for me. The university's service-driven mission, the small classes, and the presence of a community on campus and care for one another made the draw of St. Mary's irresistible. After my high school graduation in 2019 and the beginning of my time at St. Mary's, it became clear to me that it was much more than a community, that we were a family. Amidst the troubles with COVID-19 over the past 2 years, our students, faculty, and staff have shown the utmost care and support for one another. This year, I am honored to serve as the chair of the Minnesota Association of Private College Students, which we as the students commonly refer to as MAPSIS. The goal of MAPSIS is to strengthen each private college and university through collaborative thinking to help each of our campuses succeed. This year, our focus at MAPSIS has been working to expand the Hunger-Free Campus Law to allow private nonprofit colleges and universities in the state to access grant monies to establish food pantries on our campuses. Last session, this committee supported the expansion of this program to include our colleges, but ultimately, it was not included in the final bill that was signed. We are working with the other student groups here in the state and the Student Advisory Council with the Office of Higher Education to address hunger and eliminate it for all college students in our state. We look forward to working with you guys to expand the Hunger Free Campus Act grants to the private nonprofit colleges and universities, as well as increasing the funding for the grants to ensure that no student in our state goes hungry. By meeting monthly, the student leaders of our 17 private colleges and universities for the Minnesota Private College Council have been able to provide support for one another by sharing ideas and planning different initiatives that accommodate each campus's individual needs to meet the overall MAPS's goal of strengthening each school's experience. We have been working with one another to establish racial sensitivity training at each campus and working to assist our peers facing mental health hurdles or burnout, which has only been stressed by the COVID-19 pandemic. In light of our nation's racial reckoning in 2020, the MAPS's agenda continues to be focused on prioritizing the current anti-racism movement and the importance of civil advocacy. MAPS's is continuing this work to ensure that all of our students feel safe and welcome on their campuses and in their communities. MAPS's has long been a strong advocate for the Minnesota State Grant Program, and with the $7.7 billion surplus that our state has this legislative session, it is critical that the impact of the Minnesota State Grant Program is known. Representative Howard has authored House File 2859 to increase the state grant for all Minnesota students, an effort we are very thankful for. For the academic year in 2020 to 2021, 330 students at St. Mary's University received a state grant, which makes up about 22% of our undergraduate population. This investment creates opportunities to grow beyond pursuing a degree for our students. It presents possibilities for them to be a part of our campus community and helps remove financial barriers for them who would not be able to otherwise attend. This grant provides financial support that is critical to their ability to attend college and their subsequent success with their classes. Thank you for supporting the state grant program, and I hope you all continue to increase funding for the Minnesota State Grant. I am also the Vice President for Public Affairs for the Student Senate here at St. Mary's. And our mission within the Student Senate is to represent the student body and advocate for students' needs in regards to the St. Mary's experience. My position specifically as Vice President for Public Affairs is working to bring awareness to the Minnesota State Grant and facilitating advocacy efforts with student voices, which was formerly known as Day at the Capitol, an event typically held in March. But due to COVID-19, we're holding our advocacy virtually this year. Regardless of being in person or online, the St. Mary's Student Senate will continue to bring awareness and advocate for the Minnesota State Grant under the guidance of MAPS's. Many students are grateful to receive the state grant and express sincere gratitude for your investment in their future. Especially with the challenges that have developed with the current pandemic, the state grant is even more crucial in ensuring that students can be successful in their studies. Because of the state grant, students have been able to give back to their campuses and community through their research, leadership, and other involvements on campus. I'm followed by Melody Herr, a recipient of the Minnesota State Grant who represents St. Catharines University, a member of MAPS's. She will speak on her experience at St. Catharines and how the Minnesota State Grant makes for higher education possible. Thank you for taking time today to hear about MAPS's and our continued efforts to facilitate opportunities for our students to have the best college experience possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And welcome to our committee, Melody Herr. Please introduce yourself for the committee.
Hi, thank you so much. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. Firstly, thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today. Before I begin, I just wanted to introduce myself. My name is Melody Gaushua Herr. I go by she, her pronouns. I am a sophomore at St. Catharines University, double majoring in political science and economics with a minor in criminal justice studies. And my career interests lie in political advocacy, and specifically in criminal justice reform and public policy. So I am here today as a member of St. Catharines Student Senate's External Affairs Committee and as a representative of the Minnesota Association of Private College Students, or as Jonathan specified, MAPS's. I was born and raised in Little Canada, Minnesota, and I'm here to ask you to support college students by increasing state grant awards. Personally, I am interested in the state grant program because it benefits our marginalized populations, including low to middle income and especially our BIPOC, which stands for Black Indigenous People of Color, undergraduate students who are attending community, technical, and private colleges. I am Hmong Laotian. My parents immigrated from Laos around 1975, so it's most important to me that this program also benefits students who look like me, have the same background, just as much as students of other cultural and ethnic backgrounds. And this program strives for education equity, and as someone who is passionate about political advocacy, I am just wanted to state that I am 100% for it. I definitely feel that without the support of this state grant, I would be in a very different position right now. As all of you may know, college finances can be very burdening and tolling on not one's financial wellness, but mental and physical wellness as well. And I just wanted to share with you my personal story and how this grant has impacted me in the past couple of years. In the year of 2019, right before the pandemic, my dad suffered from a heart attack where he was in need of immediate medical attention and surgery to place stents in his arteries that were 99% clogged. In addition to this, I was and continue to suffer from psychological disorders, from anxiety to eating disorders that require expensive medical and therapy appointments. And before I turned 18, I didn't have very reliable medical insurance. So as you can assume, these medical bills took a toll on our family's financial situation right before I was committing to university. At my previous job, my hours were cut short due to COVID, and my dad lost his job and had to gain a new position. My dad also picked up door dashing in addition to working full time at the school he assists at, so he can earn extra finances for the family. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, I have been working only 5 to 6 hours every 2 weeks as a student worker on campus. And whenever I receive those paychecks, they go straight to my tuition bills and books. And although my current financial position has not been the smoothest, I do feel very grateful and blessed to have received scholarships and grants provided by my university. And this includes the Minnesota State Grant. Though I do know that compared to a lot of other students and families, I am very privileged to be in the position I am in as of today. And I strongly feel that the Minnesota State Grant has allowed me to choose the best educational option for me in terms of finances, level of rigor, and programs of my desired major. Before I officially decided to attend St. Kate's, I was a post-secondary enrollment option student, also known as PSEO, in which I had the opportunity to take free classes at St. Kate's, all while earning college credit. And the first class I ever took was an economics of social issues class. And it's actually the reason why I'm an econ and poli sci major today. So I feel extremely lucky to be attending St. Catherine University. And if you didn't know already, it is an all-women's college. And this atmosphere is very welcoming and overwhelmed with strong and motivated women, progressive conversations of gender inequality and women empowerment, and overall just a great job at advocating for social justice in local, national, and international contexts. I know that there are many students who are just as grateful to be attending this university with the assistance of the Minnesota State Grant as well. So to cap off my massive speech, Madam Chair and members, circling back to my request, I'm here to ask you to support college students by increasing state grant awards. And it's important to recognize in Minnesota, for those attending college here, 43% of undergraduate students receive a state grant and would benefit from this investment. In addition to this, 56% of undergraduate students of color and Native American students receive a state grant and would also benefit from this investment. So with that, thank you again for allowing me this opportunity to speak with you all, and I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Members, do you have any questions? We have a shy group today, so we do not have any questions, so we'll move on to our next group. Thank you very much for being with us today. We have our next hearing, presentation at our hearing today will be from Students United, who serve our students attending Minnesota State's seven state colleges. Joining us from Students United is State Chair Emma Zellmer. Ms. Zellmer, please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Absolutely. So thank you, Chair Bernardi and members of the Higher Education Committee, for allowing me to join you all today and speak on behalf of students. My name is Emma Zellmer, and I am the State Chair of Students United, a fourth-generation Minnesota State University Mankato student and a lifelong Minnesotan. Students United is a 501c3 nonprofit. Our board is made up of the student body presidents from our seven Minnesota State universities. Together, we represent the collective voice of all Minnesota State University students. Our mission is to be the inclusive voice for all future, current, and former students, and to actively work to represent and support Minnesota State University students by advocating at a local, system, state, and federal level for higher education policies that will make a positive impact for our students and communities. Each year, our board sets priorities for the state legislative session after extensive consultation with our student bodies across the state, including surveys, focus groups, and student committees. This feedback informed our priorities, and I am excited to have the opportunity to share these with you all with the hope that you will support these initiatives to ensure that your students are able to thrive and succeed as they work towards entering the Minnesota workforce. This year, we have three state priorities. First, we are supporting the Minnesota State System $292.9 million request for asset preservation and campus-specific capital projects. This funding will be used for nearly 100 HEPA projects on 43 campuses between the colleges and universities. This money will support the most basic needs, such as updating roofs, windows, exterior walls, and will update mechanical and utility systems to maximize efficiency and effectiveness. This will directly support student success by ensuring students continue to have a safe and accessible spaces on campus to gather and learn. This funding will improve campus teaching and learning environments, better support student outcomes, and will enhance science, technology, engineering, math, allied health, technical, business, and education classrooms and labs, as well as streamline student support services to increase our student success. As our students return to campus after the onset of the pandemic, there are soon to be 3 years of students who have never experienced a normal campus atmosphere. It is critical for the recruitment and retention of our students that their return to campus is safe and accessible. In order for our state system to stay competitive and thrive, we must invest in our campus infrastructure to ensure that all our students, a vast majority of which are lifelong Minnesotans and your constituents, have safe, accessible, and quality places to learn and grow. Our next priority is to see the Minnesota State supplemental budget request funded in full. MinState's $60 million request for campus support includes critical necessities for students, including funding to freeze tuition, increased access to mental health resources, and funding for student basic needs. The first part of this budget that is of utmost importance to our students is the $25 million for a tuition freeze. With tuition continuing to rise at a rate faster than inflation and the cost of living in our state skyrocketing, it is essential for the survival of our students that the legislature appropriates enough funding to ensure that tuition does not keep rising at such an extreme rate. During my year as a community advisor, or RA, on campus, I had a student who received the full Pell Grant, but was unable to have his parents sign on to loan to cover the rest of his tuition, and he refused to sign on to loans that were above 7% interest. He would work 30 to 40 hours per week to ensure that he could afford to live, as well as make tuition payments. Despite all of this, he was unable to make these payments and drop out due to a tuition increase. As tuition and the cost of living continues to rise, students are continuing to fall further into debt or fall out of our institutions with debt and are unable to fully contribute to our state's economy due to these situations. This tuition freeze would allow students to continue their education and focus on school without having to sacrifice funds for their basic needs. Another part of MinState's budget that is aimed to support students is the $2 million for mental health resources and $1 million for student basic needs. The Minnesota State System has become a national leader in basic needs work for students and has demonstrated their ability to work directly with students to support this. Their work with students from Students United, such as myself, LEADMN, and others across the system have informed their work and this budget. This year alone, the system office worked with myself and the president of LEADMN to author a blog and came out with a basic needs podcast hosted by myself, the president of LEADMN, and Paul Shepard, the system director of student success, to support campuses with the implementation of basic needs support that you all funded last year. The chancellor himself and leading staff from across the system were featured on this podcast to ensure that this implementation was swift and successful. With the $1 million for student basic needs, we are hoping to implement a system-wide 24/7 resource for students. This service would allow students to connect to different services that address a wide variety of student basic needs issues that are available not only on campus, but also in the community. Students who are struggling the most with having their basic needs met are the ones who often do not have the time or capacity to find these services themselves. This resource will give them access to any service they might need, as well as someone to find them, to help find them what is best. Your investment in MnState's supplemental budget will change the lives of our students by ensuring that they are able to continue their college careers, graduate, and enter the Minnesota workforce. Minnesota State has shown that these funds are immediately put into action, and student leaders will ensure that the money is being used effectively and for the programs that help students the most. Our third priority is in support of HomeLine's 2022 Minnesota Renters Agenda. The majority of our students are or will become renters across Minnesota, and housing insecurity is an issue that many of them face. HomeLine's legislative solutions will ban the use of hidden fees and increase renter privacy protections. Housing insecurity among college students has historically been underexamined, despite being a critical issue for students in Minnesota and across the country. Housing insecurity impacts students' ability to attend class, study, complete coursework, and hold a job. We hope HomeLine's legislation on eviction reform, tenant privacy protections, and increased lease fairness and transparency will assist in this. Landlords often take advantage of students due to the lack of competitive options near their campuses and are often left without affordable and safe choices. Although this may not be going through the Higher Education Committee, the link between housing needs and students' ability to succeed in our higher education systems are inseparable. We support eviction reporting to be prohibited until a court judgment is rendered in favor of the landlord. This will allow renters to solve the situation before it permanently harms their record. This is crucial for our students, as many of them are first-time renters. Expungement reform would also include pathways for tenant record to be cleared if the landlord and renter agree to it, or the eviction was ordered 3 or more years ago. This type of legislation would also be able to provide more discretion for judges to consider the renter's circumstances that caused the eviction when making a decision. This would ensure that eviction filing at the beginning of a student's renter's history will not leave a harmful, permanent record that will create barriers for them to secure housing in the future. Currently, Minnesota is one of only 7 states that does not require a landlord to notify a tenant before filing for eviction. Pre-filing notice would be required 14 days before a formal eviction can be brought. This would give a tenant and the landlord time to negotiate an agreement or give the tenant an opportunity to leave the unit without an eviction filing necessary. This is a win-win, as landlords won't need to spend money filing court claims and tenants won't experience a detrimental mark on their record that may keep them from securing housing in the future. An increasing number of landlords are charging fees for non-operational services rather than including these costs in the advertised rent for an apartment, making the financial obligations for renting the space more than what the tenant originally expected. We believe non-refundable fees for non-operational services should be prohibited to ensure renters do not suddenly face unaffordable concealed charges after signing a lease. This would make administrative costs incorporated in the tenant's rent for complete transparency. Putting these protections in place will protect renters from having a harmful mark on their permanent record and mandate transparency so tenants aren't surprised by hidden fees that weren't included in the advertised costs. This will help people avoid housing insecurity and homelessness without creating new burdens for landlords. I would like to thank you all for your time today, and by inviting students to speak directly to the issues that affect them and higher education. Student voices are crucial in this conversation, and these affect us constantly. Everything we shared with you today is representative of the issues our students are facing and encompass the changes required to ensure student success both inside and outside of the classroom. Feel free to reach out anytime via email at statechair@studentsunited.org, and I would be happy to answer any questions or provide additional testimony. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions? Okay, Representative Christensen.
Hi, thank you. And thank you, Emma. I'm just curious what the hidden charges are. You know, what kinds of charges are there in, you know, after you sign your lease and sign, you know, your promise to pay a certain amount of rent, what are those charges that pop up?
Ms. Elmer.
Thank you so much. Absolutely. So those charges are often things that are required for tenants to live in the building, but are not disclosed, making rent probably go from about $1,100 per month to about $12. So some of those services include trash, may include water or other facility services that they are mandated to pay. But since these aren't disclosed ahead of time, students, including myself, I'm currently in this situation, my rent went from $1,019 a month up to $1,100 after these hidden fees were revealed. So it really depends on the different fees, but this has been happening to college students more and more.
Do you have a follow-up, Representative Christensen?
No, that's great. Thank you. That's those should all be revealed to you when you sign your rental contract, I believe. So thanks.
Thank you. Representative Kresha.
So I'm just clear. Quick question. So are utilities the hidden fees? Is that what you're saying?
Ms. Zellner.
Sorry, my apologies. No, it's not always utilities. There may be other fees that are required. Utilities often, I understand that utilities aren't always a constant payment, as I've realized over my years as a renter, but it's fees outside of utilities, and it really depends on what those fees are for a specific one, but we would be happy to provide more examples of what goes on specifically related to our students, and I'll make sure to send that to Chair Bernardi to distribute to all of you.
Do you have a follow-up, Ms. Representative Kresha?
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand. So, I mean, you said specifically water, and then you haven't really given any other specifics. So, any other specifics come to mind?
Ms. Zellmer.
Thank you. So water is a utility, and typically that's disclosed, and it depends on how much you use. But sometimes this includes trash services and other things, or transaction fees for paying rent online. So when you pay rent online, there may be an added fee on top of that, which can be up to $50 a month. My roommate actually is the one who goes in and pays our rent online, and we have an added fee of about $50 just to use the service to pay our rent.
Representative Kresha.
I'm sorry, one last thing. So if you didn't pay the fees online, would there, those transactional fees would go away? And then are you saying trash is a hidden fee?
Ms. Zellmer.
Thank you. So there was a January fee as well as some of these paying online. Many buildings, including my own, you are required to pay your rent online. You aren't able to pay it in the office since it's an off area one. So it's really just about making sure transparency, and I would be happy to send you more information in the future about what specifics affect not only myself, but our students across the system.
Thanks, Ms. Selma. We'll make sure we get that out to the members. Thank you. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Elmer. And this has been discussed in Housing Committee, and so just wanted to thank you for bringing it to our attention. And, you know, we've heard in Minnesota of really deceptive practices, really, the inclusion of a January fee. All of a sudden, January rolls around, and there's a new fee that pops up with really not tied to any service whatsoever. And I think what Ms. Zellner is saying and what we've heard from renters is we just kind of want to know upfront what we're going to pay in the front end, and so that, you know, we're not surprised going forward, which seems eminently reasonable. And so just thank you for bringing that to our attention. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to let Ms. Zellmer also know that I'm very happy that she raised this hidden fee piece, because oftentimes we only talk about the cost of tuition, and it's the real cost of attendance that we need to be addressing in the big picture, right? So to my colleague, Representative Kreisha, in my own family, I have three adult children, and when they were living in apartments near campus, we discovered this as well. And, you know, you can't even pay in cash to avoid the fees. You know, sometimes there's a no cash policy. So if you pay with check, there's a check fee, service fee. If you pay with a credit card, not only is there an increased charge for the percentage that they would have to pay for you to use a credit card, but then there's this other transaction fee that miraculously pops up. And as Ms. Zellmer said, it can be as much as $50. So it isn't a cost that no one said before that that was going to be. And I went back and read the lease, and it was nowhere in the lease that these fees would be charged. So these are things that students are surprised by. And a $50 increase is something that nobody wants to be hit with. Regardless of your economic status. And then to the trash fee, it was also true that there was this like cleaning service. And I asked my son, what is this, that you have a cleaning service? And he said, no, that's the fee they charge for picking up the trash that we're supposed to leave outside of our door. And I said, well, don't you pay a trash fee? And he said, yes, there is a trash fee. So there's this cleaning charge plus the trash fee. So there, I think making sure that any building renting to students should have, or any renter really, should have to fully disclose all of the fees that would be tied up into that cost of living in a unit. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Are there other questions before we move on to our next testifiers? I see another one. We'll have one more question here. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, one of the things that I've observed, and I spent a good number of years in investment advisory and financial services, but I also had three of my own children go through college. And one of the first things that I observed that is woefully inadequate in the preparation for higher ed, as well as for life in general, is a financial illiteracy that our youth participate in. And I would say that is not just an incumbent requirement that the schools provide. Dare I say, the youth should be responsible for it on their own, to the extent that, you know, I hear a lot about lease contracts and whatnot. Once you turn 18, you can sign a contract and you're responsible for it. And you sign that at your own peril if you don't understand that. And to the extent that these contracts have hidden fees, I've read enough in three children going to college that asking questions up front, such as payment by electronic transfer and that type of thing, that no longer becomes a hidden fee if you ask the question and then you discover that there is a $5 a service fee for doing it. So I certainly appreciate this conversation, but I think it speaks to a larger inadequacy for financial understanding that we should be proposing, and that our youth going through college ought to take upon themselves as a responsibility. Grown adults sign contracts all the time. They should be responsible for the provisions in them.
Okay, Representative Cleavorn, if you'd like to ask a question, that would be helpful. We really like to hear from the students today. We really appreciate them coming to our committee. So if you would be respectful of that, I would appreciate it. So Representative Cleavorn, go ahead.
I will be respectful. And this speaks to the students directly. Chair Bernardi, and I appreciate you're always wanting to put student voices first, but I just have to push back a little bit. Financial literacy is something that many people do not have well into their 80s. And it is one thing when you grow up with wealth to understand wealth. It's another to understand that
wealth is and money is something that culturally many people never discuss. And that is in every ethnic group. So I want to just make sure that we're not throwing shade on students because they don't have all financial literacy by the age of 18. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for being here today, Ms. Elmer. We are going to move on to our next group. We now have a presentation from LEAD MN, who represent over 100,000 two-year college students in Minnesota. Joining us from LEAD MN is President Alex Kylander. Welcome back to our committee, Mr. Kylander. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Axel Kylander, and I am the president of LEAD MN. I have the honor to be here on behalf of my peers, 100,000 community and technical college students from every corner of the state. We are diverse in our backgrounds, identities, and ambitions, and together LEAD MN students truly embody Minnesota. We are not privileged to be born with wealth and certain futures, and so we must find our own visions and pursue the dreams we make for ourselves. Today, you will hear from four of my peers on the challenges our community faces, things that were an awful wait before the pandemic and have grown into a series of crises that threaten our futures and the future of Minnesota's workforce. But LEAD MN students dare to dream boldly, and we are proud to present you with bold ideas for change. There will be four speakers, and I will introduce each in turn, starting with Allie, who is here to share her story about affordability.
Welcome to the committee, Allie. You may proceed, and please print Tamashek, I believe. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Bernardi and the committee. For the record, my name is Allie Tamashek, and I'm a student studying political and environmental science at this lovely institution that I'm currently at right now, North Hennepin Community College, in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. So I do apologize for any feedback or noise in the hallways here, but I'm so grateful to share my story with you all today. I'm proud to say that I'm a non-traditional student, as I'm a 27-year-old, and I feel as though I'm revisiting a chapter of my life. Back in 2013, I first attended Minnesota State University Mankato, a four-year state university, but after a year, I couldn't afford the cost of living. I struggled to pay rent or groceries with a minimum wage job, and tacking on the extra expense of tuition that I could never truly afford was paralyzing. After dropping out of college to get back on track, the outstanding balance prevented me from being able to apply to other colleges, and I felt like my college experience was hopelessly over. However, 7 years later, after conquering battles with collections agencies, I finally got the chance to re-enroll back into community college, but with financial trauma. I experienced firsthand that college has become increasingly unaffordable. I mean, even without tuition in mind, the cost of textbooks can be more than an average car payment. I'm grateful for all I've learned, but sincerely hope future students don't have to struggle with the same obstacles and financial fear that I have to go through. Enrollment has declined due to the obstacles the pandemic has presented, and now, more than ever, I believe that we should provide more opportunities for students to attend college and improve their lives. Our lives are constantly changing, and from the past year, we've learned how uncertain circumstances can really be. There's no clear-cut path to success, and unfortunately, some journeys are more difficult than others, especially in this era of a pandemic. But I believe there is a generation of bright and influential people just waiting to pursue their full potential with an education, if only they get the chance to afford it, and I'm a shining example of that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Alex Kylander, would you like to present us our next presenter?
Certainly. Certainly. Thank you, Chair Bernardi and committee members. This session, college affordability is a top priority for our students. And with the state's significant surplus, we believe now is the perfect time to invest in our community and technical colleges. Minnesota currently invests about $1,700 less per full-time equivalent student than the national average in our two-year colleges, and students are the ones who are paying the price through the seventh highest tuition in the country. This year, our students chose the theme of Be Bold, and we recently made a bold proposal calling on the legislature to invest $125 million to lower tuition nearly 17%. This investment would bring tuition to levels not seen since 2005 and would have put us closer to the national average for state investment in two-year colleges. A tuition cut like this has never been done in a community and technical college system and could have an outsized impact on enrollment and our future workforce. But along with college affordability, improving the transfer of credits continues to be a critical issue for students. So now I would like to turn it over to David to have him share his experiences with transfer.
Welcome to the committee, David Metza. Please proceed and introduce yourself.
Chair Bernardi, committee members, for the record, my name is David Mesta. I'm a student at both Normandale Community College and Minnesota State University, Mankato. As a first-generation college student who has attended multiple colleges and universities, I've experienced firsthand the unnecessary barriers that still exist for students when transferring between institutions. In 2021, I graduated from South Central College with my associate's degree and decided to transfer to Mankato to pursue a degree in communication. In order to save money, I also enrolled at Normandale to take courses that would count towards my bachelor's degree. During this time, the complexity of our transfer system and poor academic advising on transfer nearly cost me thousands of dollars. I was advised to drop out of my courses at Normandale because they would not count towards my bachelor's degree, even though I had done the research to know that they were equivalent to university courses in my program. It was not financially feasible for me to take courses only at the university, as the high tuition costs, uncertainty about my Pell Grant eligibility due to fluctuating family income would put me in an unattainable financial situation. And currently, I have to pay out of pocket to attend both institutions. I was eventually able to get the university to accept my community college credits as equivalent courses to those required in my program, but the complexity of the transfer process was evident. I was lucky enough to make it through, but there are countless numbers of students who do not. In Minnesota alone, only 13% of first-time and full-time community college students complete a bachelor's degree 6 years after enrolling in college. If I wasn't fortunate enough, I would have become just another statistic of a Mexican college student who failed because of the barriers put in front of me, and I've been very close to failing college and close to not achieving my American dream. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Alex Kylander.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and committee members. In order to improve transfer, Liedemann is working to introduce legislation this session that would ask Minnesota State to create a plan to implement common sense transfer reforms, like common course numbering and creating alignment within the Minnesota transfer curriculum across all of our colleges and universities. If states like California or Texas can create these reforms, I believe we can do them here. With your help, we can make sure that we take another major step towards creating a truly student-friendly transfer system. While affordability and transfer represent some of the institutional barriers that exist to accessing higher education, many of our students experience barriers from outside the classroom that negatively impact their ability to succeed in college. And so I would like to turn it over to Marcellus to share his story with basic needs and mental health.
Welcome to the committee, Marcellus. Ifan Laja, did I get it right? Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Marcellus Ifan Laja, and I'm a current student at Minneapolis College and Metro State studying finance with the intent to develop my own literacy and bring that back to my community. For me, turning 18 meant I was out of the house and responsible for my own basic needs. I had been in and out of the foster care system, and it was clear once I was off to college, it was with no support but my own. I could barely afford to go to college, but as I spent 13 years of my young life preparing for it, I could barely afford not to. I valued my education, and I valued the institutional room and board that was my only option to cover my basic needs. But that came at a price. And despite working full-time while taking classes full-time, it was a price I could not afford. So after one semester didn't work out, I had to deal with my pending reality. Over the next year and a half, I managed full-time jobs while crashing at shelters, hitching up with relatives, and getting way too comfortable in my car before I was able to secure steady housing. That year and a half came with significant damage to my mental health, sacrifice of just about everything I own, and perhaps worst of all, the pressing notion that I was never supposed to go to college in the first place. What good would I be to the workforce, to my community, and to society if the trauma endured during and because of my educational journey had pushed me to give up on school, give up on myself, or give up on life. I come from Dayton's Bluff. I was poor and hungry, and I know a lot of folks around me were too. And college is one of those few places where we can change that and then turn around and help each other change that without thinking about crime or violence. Because to be honest, there's a lot of that in Dayton's Bluff too. Reflecting on my community, it's hard. It's hard to be African-American in this country, but it's far more difficult to be African-American and uneducated. And so my story, while difficult, is not uncommon where I come from. What is uncommon is that I'm still in college and that I'm still trying. Socioeconomic mobility shouldn't be like Will Smith's Pursuit of Happiness movie. As leaders and advocates for the higher education system, we must acknowledge our self-imposed responsibility to take care of our students, all students. If we are committed to their success, we must provide them with the resources to help them cover their basic needs and conquer battles with mental health as they pursue an education. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Axel Kylander, we'll go back to you.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and committee members. There are resources available to help many students, SNAP, housing assistance, or other community programs. But many students will not get the help they need because of a lack of clarity around how to access these resources. LEADAMN supports Minnesota State's supplemental budget request for basic needs and mental health funding. These proposals build on the basic needs and mental health legislation that LEADAMN worked with you to pass last session. And we believe that the initiatives contained within this request, especially if coupled with additional funding for mental health counseling support, would have a tremendous impact on students' ability to overcome the challenges they face from basic needs and mental health challenges. When it comes to accessing resources, students struggle not just to access basic needs and mental health support, they also struggle to access the very financial aid that is intended to help make college affordable and accessible. I would like to now turn it over to Henry to share their story about accessing, about accessing financial aid.
Welcome to the committee, Henry Mingo. Please proceed and introduce yourself.
Chair Bernardi and committee members, for the record, my name is Henry Mingo, and I'm a student at Minneapolis College studying graphic design. When I was in high school, I thought college would be permanently out of reach for me because I knew my family couldn't afford it. I gave up hope. I gave up on trying to do well in high school and accepted that I would never be like my classmates, excitedly preparing to go to college to pursue goals and dreams. I felt left behind and unworthy of dreams. It wasn't until years later that I discovered the financial aid that was available to me. I was stunned. Now I'm a Pell Grant recipient with goals and dreams that I've worked hard to feel worthy of. But to me, that's a success story when there are so many students who are children of low-income families and are eligible for the Pell Grant, but are left forever thinking that college is out of reach. We can do more to let students know about how to navigate paying for college. Every student deserves to feel worthy of a dream. I am the low-income high school senior who didn't know, a face to the name. We can't keep doing this disservice to our graduating high school seniors and to ourselves by missing out on this opportunity to strengthen our workforce and to address this glaring equity issue.
Thank you very much. Highlander?
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and members of the committee. In 2021, eligible graduating Minnesota high school students left nearly $49 million in Pell Grant funding unused. Completing the FAFSA is the key to accessing this financial aid, and it is absolutely critical to affording higher education for thousands of Minnesotans. That is why LEADAMN has worked with legislators to introduce House File 2046, which would add FAFSA completion as a graduation requirement for high school seniors with a no questions asked opt-out. If passed, Minnesota would join seven other states, both Democratic and Republican, who have implemented such a policy to help boost FAFSA completion and college enrollment. In conclusion, I would like to thank the members of this committee for hearing from the diverse voices of our students today and considering the solutions we have proposed. As we move past the pandemic, there is ample opportunity, I think a historic opportunity, to create a higher education system that is truly accessible and affordable to all Minnesotans, prepares our state's workforce, and provides students an opportunity to pursue their version of the American dream. Thank you.
Thank you very much for all of your testimony. Members, are there any questions? Okay, very thorough. Okay, it looks like we don't have any questions. So thank you very much today for being here. We appreciate it hearing from you. And now we're going to move to our final presenters. We'll be hearing from a presentation from the Minnesota Student Association, who serve our students at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus. Joining us from MSA are Grace Johnson and Carter Yost. Ms. Johnson, please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and committee members. My apologies in advance if you can hear some of the road noise from 35W behind me. It's unfortunately rush hour. My name is Grace Johnson, and I'm a senior at the University of Minnesota. I'll be graduating this May with degrees in political science, applied economics, as well as a minor in business law. I'm also currently the director of government and legislative affairs for the Minnesota Student Association, which is the undergraduate student government that represents all 35,000 plus undergraduate students at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. As we enter year three of an unprecedented public health crisis, increasing access to resources and fighting to meet the basic needs of students has been at the forefront of MSA's advocacy. Within this area, there are two main goals we would like to accomplish this legislative session, the first of which is housing reform. Insecurity in housing is absolutely detrimental to student success, and as a result, we want to make sure renters are equipped with the necessary tools to make housing as accessible and anxiety-free as possible. MSA is collaborating with Student Legal Services, which is a resource for students on campus, and Homeline on a comprehensive housing reform package, primarily centered around legislation for early lease renewal and duty to mitigate. The second goal in this area is the expansion of telehealth services. The beginning of the pandemic, Governor Waltz issued an executive order to make telehealth services accessible regardless of a patient's distance from the provider in which they are seeking treatment. The order has since been terminated, but we are still amidst the pandemic and telehealth services have surged in popularity, especially among students who come from all across the state, country, and globe to study at the University of Minnesota. And we would like to see this expansion of telehealth services expanded. While we are still adapting to the weekly changes that COVID-19 brings, the return to in-person learning has begun, and it has become glaringly obvious to both students and administrators that many university buildings and facilities are in poor condition. And this is why the university approved a capital budget request and supplemental budget request to, among other things, improve the infrastructure of buildings across campus to update their safety and accessibility features, and upgrade the laboratories and learning spaces that our university uses to educate the future of Minnesota's workforce. Campus safety is another recurring conversation on the U of M campus, and while my colleague Carter will touch on our goals in this area a bit more, I cannot stress enough how important it is to address the sexual violence that is so prevalent on college campuses as an integral piece of the puzzle that makes up campus safety. MSA is currently exploring different methods to combat sexual violence on campus and hoping to put measures in place at the state level to hold perpetrators accountable for their actions at the discretion of victim survivors. And lastly, the eyes of students, administrators, and legislators were on the University of Minnesota Board of Regents this December as they made the decision to approve a salary increase for the university president by hundreds of thousands of dollars. Meanwhile, the students, faculty, and staff of the university have taken on a multitude of sacrifices, including a 1.5% tuition increase, remote learning, and lack of access to the resources that we pay for, and furloughs and pay cuts. The Minnesota Student Association has been outspoken about this double standard, and we gain the support of thousands of students and alumni in our efforts. The concerns of students were not given much more than a passing thought, however, and we hope to use this vote by the Board of Regents as a driving force to reform the regent selection process in order to further prioritize the voices of students on the highest governing body within our university. With that, I'll pass things to my colleague, Carter Yost.
Welcome to the committee. Thank you, and welcome to the committee, Carter Yost. Please introduce yourself.
Thanks so much. Can you guys hear me okay?
Sure can.
Perfect. Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. I hope everybody's well, and thanks for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Carter Yost, I use pronouns like he, him, and his, and I'm an undergraduate student studying at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. It's my second year at the U, my second year in Minneapolis, and my second year as an elected student leader in the Minnesota Student Association. Currently, I serve as the ranking voting member in MSA, as a member of our organization's executive board, and as a leading co-chair for our Fight for 15 ad hoc committee focused on increasing the minimum and average wages for student workers at the university. I'm here before the committee to represent, to the best extent that I can, the voices, values, and perspectives of students at UMNTC, particularly in regards to two key issues at play with the university's present budget request. One, student and staff worker compensations, particularly in regards to the failures of the university's existing minimum wage to adequately meet the basic needs of undergraduate students. And two, to offer hopefully some insight on student stances pertaining to the safety and support systems on campus, whether they be implemented already, in need of improvement, or yet to be introduced altogether. So I want to devote at least a few minutes of the committee's time today to considering and contextualizing the present state of affairs regarding student workers at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. Jobs on campus, particularly positions like undergraduate teaching assistants or researchers or library aides and more, can be fantastic educational and employment opportunities for students set to soon enter the workforce in Minnesota. Campus jobs are oftentimes more convenient and more contributive to the collective well-being on campus than off-campus work might be. Unfortunately, the most significant barrier to students wanting to seek those jobs is the pay. There has been a conversation for the last 2 years or so pertaining to the notion of a labor crisis, and that has permeated its way into the discourse at the university as well. Staffing levels have been insufficient in areas of dining, in areas of campus and housing and residential life, both at Twin Cities and across our system. As it stands, the University of Minnesota abides by the Minnesota statewide minimum wage rate of $10.33 an hour. In the Twin Cities area, the estimated living wage, that is the estimated calculated hourly wage a full-time worker would need to make in order to afford basic needs given the local cost of living, as calculated and defined by the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. The living wage estimated in Twin Cities, in Hennepin County and Ramsey County, is nearly $16. So there's a $5.50 difference between what people need to make to survive in the Twin Cities area and what students are paid at minimum if you are a student worker at the University of Minnesota. So it is ultimately a crisis of confidence for students to believe that if you are to take a campus job, that you will be able to sufficiently and fully or adequately address the basic needs that you might have. And if you're a student, there's a few that come to mind most particularly, including rent and groceries and things that all of us depend on, but are especially high and salient and front of mind for many students. When asked in our MSA fall survey, all campus last semester, whether or not they felt that the current university minimum wage rate, which was at the time $10.08 and has since increased marginally to $10.33 an hour, 85% of the 3,200 students who responded to the survey said no, that they didn't believe that the minimum wage was enough to meet their current basic needs. Because of the university's public land grant status, students and staff positions at the university aren't subject to adherence to the municipal wage laws in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Ergo, there's a precipitous and ultimately fairly harmful cliff wedged between the wage ranges of on-campus jobs and jobs near or off campus entirely. At the moment, the Minneapolis local minimum wage is around $14.25 an hour, where there are over 100 employees, which would be the case at the university. And that number is set to increase in about 4 months, at which point it'll be more than $3 an hour more than the minimum wage offered to student workers at UMNTC. In addition to necessary pressure and budget support that I believe this committee can offer, the Minnesota Student Association strongly supports this committee taking legislative action to ensure the university abides by the local labor laws within their community or municipal area. Of course, there are other ways that we can work to ensure that the wage is increased on campus. Last fall, at the request of the university's president, a working group of provosts was formed designed to address the issue. Since it was formed, they have not yet made any announcement or a sort of tangible proposal related to the changes or increases of minimum wage, but we do think that might happen to some extent before the end of this semester. Regardless, it has been an ongoing fight for the past 4 years on campus in the Twin Cities area to increase the minimum wage to, at minimum, $15 an hour. This isn't a fight that started last week. This is a fight that the Minnesota Student Association has been actively participating in for longer than an average student would attend their undergraduate process at the university. And the wage has not yet seen a substantial change within that time, save for changes due to inflation or the statewide minimum wage increases. Notably, support for this action that might be taken by the university or encouraged by the legislature. You might have noted that last fall, the university's president, who is among one of the highest paid individuals at the University of Minnesota, received a considerable percentage increase in wage, argued by the Board of Regents as being a matter of gender and pay equity. And while certainly the Minnesota Student Association is deeply invested in the value, importance, and execution of gender and pay equity, it's disappointing to see that kind of defense only invoked when it comes to multi-million dollar contracts and not the students who are struggling to afford their rent near campus or on campus. But just this past weekend, support for this action was shown to be existent far beyond just our immediate campus, far beyond just this committee. On Saturday, the Association of Big Ten Students, which is the collective student government group representing all 14 Big Ten universities and more undergraduate students than any other governmental student advocacy organization in the nation, convened their 2022 winter convention, during which they unanimously passed and approved legislation proposed by MSA, which I helped write, calling on Big Ten institutions, including the University of Minnesota, to take swift and tangible action to increase the minimum wage for student workers and university staff on their respective campuses to at least $15 an hour. While I'm optimistic that there might be some increase set to occur sometime in the future, it's difficult to say and disheartening to think that whatever change might come out of the vacuum of the president's working group might not well be sufficient for student needs. And I encourage this committee to consider avenues through funding, through assistance, or through policy action to spur the university into increasing the wage to better support student needs. Ultimately, and I suppose unsurprisingly, it boils down to a conversation about offset costs. If tuition increases by 1.5% a year, every year, if there's an increase in student service fees, if the cost of housing continues to rise, if the cost of food continues, whatever it might be, There's action that's necessary and there's action that's takeable by this committee, and I think I hope to see it happen in the future. Moving on to the second portion and shorter portion of my testimony today, there are a few noteworthy avenues of budget allocations I want to bring before the committee that relate to the realms of campus safety, and student health. The discourse surrounding public safety, as I'm sure all of you as elected representatives are acutely aware, has been a little tense recently. And while there are a great deal of policy perspectives on this matter, many of which can be just and valid, even if not ideologically identical, regardless of those disagreements, though, there are a few specific policy and budgetary proposals related to issues of campus safety that are both broadly popular with students and administrators alike, and are demonstrably effective in increasing the state of feelings and provable statistics of student safety, provided the funds are available. One of the most consistent areas of focus and concern for students, and thus a central point of advocacy for MSA, has been the lack of adequate lighting around campus. If given increased funds, which has been an ongoing proposal for the past few years, to construct more temporary or permanent lighting in poorly lit areas around campus and near campus, such as in the Dickey Town and Marcy Homes neighborhood area, it would increase the levels of student safety, decrease the levels of sexual assault, robberies, violent crime, petty crime, whatever else it might be, and is an immediately tangible and important area where money can go through this committee, through granting the university's budget request, to ensure that students are better protected on a near campus. Now, this isn't to say that the university has been entirely opposed to many of these proposals. There are, of course, some areas where the university has been making great headway in the right direction. For example, the UMN Parking and Transportation Service is in the process of creating a universal transit pass for all students. And this is a boon for campus and community accessibility and a proposal that's deeply popular with students across campus and across the system. Recently, however, PTS estimated the cost of such a change would result in an increase in student service fees by as much as $30 to $50 a semester per student. Now, I find it perhaps worth noting that such a significant increase in semesterly student fees is not a matter of financial literacy, but a matter of financial burden placed unduly upon students already struggling to meet many of their basic needs. If legislature were to provide additional funding for PTS systems, it would likely amount to a significant increase and a shift in student quality of life. This funding could partially include subsidizing the cost of the universal transit pass to reduce student service fees costs for students. It could include more money to help hire more bus drivers and bring in more buses to expand our sustainable campus fleet. It could help to increase the number and frequency of nighttime bus routes on campus, a change which also coincides with increasing public safety support systems at the U. Of all concerns that we've surveyed last year, the year before, and the year prior, of all concerns students have on campus related to issues of safety and security, their number one area of concern is walking home at night. And it is entirely possible for us to find and conjure within ourselves both the courage of policy and the fiscal support necessary to create systems such as expanded lighting, improved transit services, increased numbers of social and mental health workers employed by the university or hired through Boynton Health, the University of Minnesota Police Department. There are a multitude of options that can be taken in completing the university's budget request that can help to increase levels of public safety, and student health. It has been an ongoing piece of contention between MSA and other individuals at the university as a proposal to increase the number of therapists and mental health staff employed by Boynton Health Services at the university. Last spring, MSA passed a resolution unanimously to follow that proposal, and it has yet to happen. But it's a subject, again, of money and cost. So it boils down, as it all does, to the simple fact that the Minnesota Student Association, in its effort to represent students, is here today to represent the values and fiscal needs of the university. And we hope to see that moral and political obligation of the Higher Education Committee fulfilled to support those efforts. Thanks for your time. We're happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. Carter, if you could give me a call, I would love to talk to you. We don't have enough time right now because we have another meeting coming up here, but I would really, really enjoy having a conversation with you.
I'd appreciate that, Representative. We'll be in touch.
Very good. Thank you.
Are there any other questions from members? Okay, I don't see any other questions. I want to just take a moment to thank all of our student testifiers today. You were moving and inspiring and such great leaders in our state. And thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedules to help us here at the legislature do all we can to help make it easier for you to be able to get your degrees and achieve your dreams. And so we thank you for all you're doing and for your candor and for your support in helping us today. So thank you very, very much. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, February 8th. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.